Thanks again to everybody that's read. Helps us open the meeting. Take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Massive welcome to any visitors to our meeting this evening, and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be with us. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. I would just say before we start, if anybody's got any questions during the meeting, please don't hesitate to private message either Jay or moderator or Ali, our GSR, or myself in direct message. If you've got any problems with the software or anything else you'd like to ask, so please go for that. So like I said, we are a speaker meeting, and it falls to me to welcome our speaker this evening. This is someone I've known for a while on social media, and I like the stuff that this individual talks about and the questions he asks and the things that he says. And I thought I'd take a punt and invite him to come and share for us. And we actually got an opportunity to speak this afternoon for an hour and a half or an hour or so, whilst I helped him find his way into the technology. And I'm delighted to say that I think we've got an awful lot in common. We have a lot of passion for Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a lot of passion for service, and we have a lot of passion for carrying a message to the addict that still suffers. So without further ado, I'm going to invite Tariq to share his experience, strength and hope, his journey into and through Narcotics Anonymous for 40, 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with. So Tariq, the floor is yours, my friend. Please share with us. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm an addict, and my name's Tariq.
Hi, Tariq. Welcome, Tariq.
Hi, Tariq.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for the welcome. I haven't got anything planned to say. I'm grateful to be clean, and I didn't think that was something. That concept was weird to hear about being grateful to be clean. I my experience prior to coming to Narcotics Anonymous was that I wasn't grateful when I was clean. And I'm grateful today to be in recovery, as found through the program of Narcotics Anonymous, and to be able to share with others such as yourselves, you know. Like I said, I haven't got really anything planned to say. I had the pleasure of having a chat to Steve before about how to serve the meeting. You know, I understand, you know, the purpose of a group and group put on meetings, and you know, it's to carry the message. And I just said, you know, like, how can I best do that? You know, I just said a little bit like what I kind of already knew, but I just like to sort of clarify, because I can doing anything, like, I've never been on this, I've not really had much experience online. It's been a great way in the last, I don't know, year and a half or so, that I've connected to the fellowship at large and others who are passionate about recovery and who are beyond my sort of immediate sort of geographical locality, you know. And it's just opened my eyes to just the true diversity, and I like the description of the symbol in our basic text, you know, and broadening the base, you know, and finding goodwill, and I am nervous a little bit. I remember when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I felt like I'm not prone to going bright red. People who know me would know that, you know, I don't flush easy. I have a darker than most complexion, and I felt whenever I'd open my mouth, like, the room would get hotter, my heart. Internally, I had some internal unmanageability, to use the language that I was learning when I came. I didn't notice that. I just kind of felt a little bit uncomfortable, and it was doing what I'm doing now, being prepared to open my mouth. And then also, now I'm sort of doing what was given when I came here. So when I came here, I was kind of just wanted to belong, and try to sound like I was doing the things and using the things that people who belonged here did, you know, which didn't make me all that vulnerable, but that's what I was getting shown. So I think today I proceed prayerfully to just, you know, put that fear out of the way and just do what I'm here to do, you know. And I invited a little prayer to a God of my understanding before. So I'm going to just share about, you know, some things that brought me here, and you know, what it was like coming here and what it's like now. And I've kind of sort of like done it a little bit backwards, because I've talked a little bit about this whole thing of you know, meetings being online that I didn't know about for my first few years in recovery. Didn't even know about, let alone, you know, hear about. Yeah, so, you know, I arrived in, well, before I arrived at Narcotics Anonymous, I kind of, I've got to qualify this, you know, like these set of circumstances isn't what makes me an addict. This is just my experience. My intention here is just to share my experience. It's not to be an authority on Narcotics Anonymous. It's just to share a little bit about me, and how I feel like I belong here, and some of the circumstances in my life, that there might be some sort of connection around feeling, you know, like, don't have to have used certain drugs. I try not to mention drugs by name. That's just me. I think, you know, it's where they took us that matters. But I'll just talk about some of the feelings, you know, when I found drugs, which were the most obvious symptom of a disease of addiction. And again, I didn't know none of that stuff before I came here. So what I knew is that I felt a little bit uncomfortable. And I think I was the, you know, I was always separating myself, always felt separated, for a lot of my formative years. And yeah, what you know, I actively sought out the those who were sort of on the fringes, and who I could feel a bit more. I wanted to sort of feel a little bit a part of something. You know, it was a little bit something edgy. You know, it wasn't a creepy guy pushing drugs in the corner of the playground when I started using. I actively sought out older guys, feeling a little bit uncomfortable myself, and they introduced me to like a darker subculture, some, you know, like, and they didn't have to play by the rules. You know, everybody else was trying to get educated and, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up kind of stuff. And, you know, and I didn't have any, you know, I just wanted to have to sort of do very little, I guess. And have money come to me easily. And that's what they appeared to be doing. So I gravitated towards them, and I was introduced, or was I introduced, or did I sort of say I want some of that, you know, and I wanted a lot of stuff, you know, and I quickly tried a lot of drugs, and you know, to the point where, you know, I thought that would help me find out a little bit of my identity. I have a West Indian mother. And like, I thought, you know, smoking cannabis, it kind of, I could make out like I was like this unfazable guy. I'd be kind of like, you know, like a little bit like the English gentleman, stiff upper lip, doesn't have to say too much in the face of like all these feelings that were going on for me. But also a little bit like Bob Marley, you know, like a little bit of a chiller, a little bit chilled, a little bit like unfazed, cool is what I thought. And you know, there was a progression, you know, like of being quite tall as well. So I was talking about it with a group of addicts, because I do that. I hang around with addicts today, in recovery, not in crack dens. And we was talking about like how, you know, how we got served, you know, like I looked older, I was tall. If I wasn't buying the stuff, I was able to reach to the top shelf for stuff that was not just alcohol, but top shelves for things that young lads wanted, you know, and I wanted. And, you know, I didn't have a problem with taking things. I had a sense of entitlement that followed me along into recovery, you know. A relationship with being honest. And you know, so yeah, so I so I moved from drug to drug, because like I said, I mentioned alcohol there, and you know, we knew alcohol's a drug, you know. Yeah, I used a lot of drugs. I didn't experiment. No one taught me. I just, like, being the young put, I felt like I should do more to kind of catch up, maybe. I don't know. No one showed me to you know, I just went all in, you know. And again, it's not what or how much I used. Eventually, where that took me after a few years in my 20s, I was kind of burnt out, and I tried hiding. I'd progressed to what was, you know, like the forbidden fruit, you know, like so among these guys, they would sell drugs and stuff, and I was like, you can have whatever you want, just stay away from that one substance and you'll be all right. And then I caught one of them, or he owned it, and I was like, you know, sorry, I'm trying not to swear as well. So yeah, no one told me not to swear. I didn't come here for not to swear. I'm just trying to be a bit more considerate today, just not side note. So yeah, I you know, he kind of effectively lied. So I wanted to know what it was all about, and that was a very slippery slope. And I tried to hide, you know, I was what we'd say around here, hooked, or had a habit, or you know, like I was, you know, I was on some drugs where I was, you know, I was taking that same drive of more, and. And I used for a few years, and eventually, like in my 20s, I was effectively put into like a mental ward in a hospital by way of the family trying to keep it hush hush to get me sort of disconnected, detoxed, and fixed. And I remember like this psychiatrist dude saying, you know, like, what are you going to do now? You know, after I'd been there for a few months, and. Like, oh, well, that stuff was killing me, you know. If I'm ever tempted to go back that way, I'll just think of myself in an alley dying, and that'll be enough, you know. That was terrible. Thanks very much. And he's like, kind of like, yeah, off you pop. You might want to have a look at a few places. Here's one of them. And he sent me to a place, and, you know, it wasn't for me. It was like some sort of, let's say, self-help kind of thing, model based on, you know, looking at your thinking. And it just wasn't for me. I ended up finding another guy in there, and we were using it in no time. And, you know, like there was a guy who was at the front of the kind of like a class, and he would do stuff on flip charts and examine our thinking. And, you know, today I learned, you know, a problem created in my thinking or with my thinking can't be solved with my thinking. That's just for me, you know, as my understanding of this spiritual sickness, this disease of addiction, this... You know, so I arrived at that room, and I heard somebody mentioned about Narcotics Anonymous, and I hadn't had any experience of it. And somebody piped up, I remember it. It's odd that I remember it, because there's quite a lot of stuff that I'm not so great at recalling. But I remember hearing it, and you know, oh, have you ever thought about going to something like called Narcotics Anonymous? And this guy straight away just popped up and said, you don't want to bother with that. They're the God Squad. So I didn't bother with it, and I went. Doing what I'd always done. You know, me and this guy were kind of like looking at each other incredulously, turning in, week out to these sort of meetings. We eventually used, and a few weeks later, I think it was more embarrassing me that I ended up driving a deal around to get my own drugs and as a means to get extra drugs or whatever you'd say, taking risks. And I sold to the facilitator. So I was like, well, you know, if he's full of crap, you know, recovery or like being abstinent and all this other stuff is full of crap. And I promptly went out on another 10-year run or so, where I had times in between. I had times where I'd go to hot places because I was like, well, you know, it's very uncomfortable, but if you go to somewhere hot and don't use, you'll be all right. And you know, it was hellish, but one of those times, actually, the first time I tried it, you know, I had substituted while I was out there, but I got away from the one more focal drug that, and I thought that was a model for, you know, and I periodically I'd go on holidays and I'd get sort of written off on the insurance, you know, as you know, I'd have sympathetic hospital staff who would say, well, you know, we understand what you've been doing. It's, you know, we'll just say you got dehydrated gastroenteritis and, you know, like we'll stick you up to a drip because you're not very well. Dehydrated yourself, you can't take care of yourself, we'll sort of patch you up and you know, I was clean for all of a little while, and I'd come back from those holidays and you know, in spite of that stuff, you know, and it being hellish, I didn't last very long and I'd end up using again. I was never more up for the fight of quitting than when I just used. I'd get back into the run of things and on the outwardly, I'd try and hold down jobs, which I often did. And, you know, I even got a degree whilst using a lot of drugs. You know, I didn't do much of the work myself. I'm one for sort of, you know, outsourcing stuff like that or stealing people's work or plagiarizing. It was a lot easier when I went to uni. In these days, if you plagiarize, it can be easily sort of found out through algorithms or whatever. So yeah, quite resourceful chap, carried on using, appearing on the outside, crippled on the inside. And you know, I was never more up for the fight of quitting than when I just used. And I do these lists dead late at night. And on these lists, I'd say, I wouldn't say it in the language I heard in the rooms of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'd say, you know, like enough's enough. And I really meant it that in the night, but invariably, you know, in the morning, I would have something left over. Or it would be that uncomfortable that I'd say, well, we'll get to this. You know, it was always tomorrow. We'll get to this. But if we just sort ourselves a little less out today and reduce and moderate and control or substitute or find something, you know, I'd rationalize, I'd justify. And in spite of meaning it the night before, I lacked the willpower, the self-restraint and the strong determination to stay stopped. And, you know, I think that was, you know, what I understood here was, you know, in the first step is that I will use again, you know, that I was answerless to this thing inside of me that goes against my willpower, it's in ascendancy of it, you know, of my willpower, self-restraint, strong determination. And, you know, like the program is quite rigid, you know, but my understanding has changed as, you know, so, you know, there's some simple things that I understood after coming here that I could relate because I heard from others, you know, and I think that's one of the most important things that I heard was to keep coming back because having failed at getting stopped, I didn't even arrive here with a desire to stop using because I thought, why desire to do something that you ultimately fail at? Because that was my experience on my own. I ultimately, yeah, I wanted that because I saw that as a you know, like as a problem, the drug use. I didn't understand about the drugs being a symptom. And I'm really grateful, you know, that we have that identification in some of our literature about what we are and we're Narcotics Anonymous and our problem and, you know, and so, yeah, I you know, I like the simplicity about powerlessness and unmanageability. No power and no choice and surrender, you know, I arrived and I learned a lot of that stuff, you know, after many years, but I arrived without a desire to stop using through a treatment center. It's just my journey. You know, recovery is possible in Narcotics Anonymous. I have to stress that, you know, because I came out of that treatment center and I hadn't changed anything. In fact, had lied, you know, to have a better, because I didn't have like some of the hard luck stories. You know, they introduced me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, But I heard other people, and I thought I needed a proper hard luck story. I didn't have a reason for it. You know, it's odd, you know, because I didn't understand. You know, like I just didn't understand this internal condition. You know, baffled me. You know, like I've got a sister. She can have a bit to drink. Her husband can turn around and say, you know, you've had a bit too much. You're acting a bit of an egg. And she can just stop, and her problems just stop. And that wasn't me. I stopped, and my problems just started, you know, and it just baffled me, you know, because it wasn't about environmental factors. It wasn't about the horrible things that happened. It wasn't because my mum didn't buy me a Tonka toy. I just didn't know. I didn't know, you know, and you guys, you know, helped me see what I had, but also what I could do about it. Because I was busy, you know, being self-piteous and confused around stuff. And you helped me understand something I had in common. And that we do recover, you know, and thank God we do recover, because it was horrible. It was horrible. And untreated in addiction with clean time, you know, backing away from this stuff. I found myself at about 4 years clean, jobless, not quite penniless, but I'd quit a really good job, you know, on the back of a relationship break, you know, all I was doing was just keep coming back, you know, and you know, through that, I started re-engaging with the program, with a sponsor, and you know, and that's how I know that this is something that, you know, I can relate to on Just for Today, and the keep coming back. I can relate to persistency and consistency, you know, and what we have on offer here, which is a program, a total program for treating the disease of addiction. But I didn't arrive here with a desire to stop using. No, and that's amazing, you know, that I thought, you know, that I bonded to my own thinking, this wouldn't have been possible. And something started shifting, you know, as I became part of the we that we mentioned in our steps, you know, at the start of our step. In every step, there is that word we, you know, even in step 12, because it doesn't start with it, you know, like you read the full step, you know, we try to carry this message, you know. So there's something very important about the literature for me. I love Narcotics Anonymous literature. Really, really love it. Because before I got confident enough to even open up to other addicts, I could put my head in the book and I could relate to stuff. And it just continues to touch me. I'm so grateful to our predecessors. I was a little bit phased at the start of the meeting, heard that there was somebody sharing next week, and you know, and I was just thinking about how people from the writing of the basic text just have, you know, these monumental clean time. They're quite, you know, quite young in recovery, and that blows me away. Most of my recovery has been learning what not to do, and I can be really confused. But the simplicity of the program as well, of those people who stuck around and shared it, you know, that helped me understand that the meaning of a step is not in the words, it's the principles behind it, and that the words carry us, you know, like, you know, to the principles, and that's like a boat carrying us to safety, to shore, to harbour, or whatever. You know, you guys just continue to fan, you know, a flame of desire that's started, you know, because it's like, well, you know, I'm carrying on thinking that change isn't possible, but yous are all relatable in that, like, all I really heard when I first came here was, like, was what I was more accustomed to knowing. So I was more accustomed to knowing stuff like the getting and using, finding ways and means to get more. I was more interested in what you knew, who you'd scored off, what you'd done, where you'd been. I kind of gave a bit of reverse kudos for some of the grimy stuff, you know, like some of the stuff that we would call the not yets, you know, some of the stuff that I hadn't done. But it was it just drew me in. And talk of spiritual awakening and the you know, like, intellectually I could understand words like surrender and stuff, but I didn't really have much texture to that. And I really how these words were used, and even like our own definition of addiction and an addict, you look at it and compare it to a dictionary, because my recovery has involved use of a dictionary in a basic text, as well as other guides and using, you know, a sponsor and, you know, and working and starting to live this stuff. You know, we have it clearly, you know, like, you know, in that who is an addict, and then we can compare it, you know, in our focus. It, just things captivated me and scared me, but I got a clear message of hope and the promise of freedom because I could relate. But I found it hard to relate to things like spiritual awakening and living and working the steps, you know. But that's what we had on offer here, to find a new way to live. I love our message, you know, because it mentions that in it, you know, that an addict's any addict, that's all inclusive. You know, even me, who was ruling myself out for being the wrong colour, too tall, you know, I intellectualised this stuff for a while, you know, didn't understand those principles beneath things and how to follow them. And, you know, it just, I resisted, I fought, I've been downright rude and obnoxious at times. And I was very rarely being told not to keep coming back. Yeah, but that does acknowledge that, you know, sometimes my behavior hasn't been acceptable and people have told me the truth in no uncertain terms. Sometimes I've been like walking in with a football top on, in, you know, from the opposing team in their home ground. You know, I've been very rebellious, and sometimes I've been caught up in causes and being an activist and championing the little man. I've had all sorts of behaviours. I didn't, you know. At other times, I've tried to not be honest with, you know, and I've tried to appear to be the spiritual giant. And, you know, I often laugh with my friends about what it means to appear to be woke and spiritual competitiveness and, you know, and learning what not to do. But, yeah, so you guys kind of showed me what it meant to find a new way to live, and that, you know, there's only one requirement for membership, and anyone may choose to join us. And, you know, so from that requirement to membership, there's things that we do here to find a new, so that any addict, you know, can stop using, loses out use, and find a new way to live. And what were the elements of finding a new way to live? And you made it attractive. I'm not drawn to authority figures. You know, there's people in my life today, I'm really touched to share in each other's lives and for them to get vulnerable, and in that example I start being a little bit more honest myself and vulnerable. I don't know how long I've been prattling on for. I'm just going to mention the steps and the traditions, because that's the new way of life that I found here in Narcotics Anonymous. And you know, I don't know if I've got it in me to do a stepalogue, but I really did like them. I like, you know, hearing about what is we are, you know, and our experience. I'll just say, you know, like, you know, I came here, I heard about Program of Complete and Total Abstinence from all mind and mood altering substances, and what that meant, and that was uncomfortable, and rigorous honesty allowed me to sort of share about what was uncomfortable about it. This thing, you know, like what I was turning to, you know, the drugs, you know, and then removed. It was like I was one, you know, I could relate to things like, you know, while using, we were drug crazed maniacs. Without using, we were just left with crazed maniacs. I heard that from people, you know. I've embraced a diverse fellowship, you know, and we've got our experiences of the NA program. And our use of the literature, which I say is like a bit of a recipe book, like using our literature. You know, there's no nutritional content. It's what we do with it. You know, and I think that's the thing about what I was saying about the principles leading us to Ava, you know. So in surrender, in step one, I couldn't keep doing what I was doing, and I had to find a new way to live that was working for others. So my actions had to be different to what I was doing. That's the first thing you do when you surrender. And then, you know, things like making admissions, you know, getting honest with others, admissions around powerlessness, unmanageability. You know, I really like doing inventory, you know, which is odd because I didn't really like doing any work for myself when I came here, you know, and today I really see the benefits in it. You know, and first step inventory has been really beneficial, you know, seeing how the disease still manifest without the drugs, you know, and that, you know, you know, the things that I do with obsession and compulsion, those things that I do to seek instant gratification, those things that I do when acting on defects because I'm feared up or, you know, seeking a control or manipulate, those things put a dark spot on my spirit, and I call them reservations. Those, you know, because I don't have triggers. I get to take responsibility for my internal, you know, and I think a lot of this stuff that we have today sometimes keeps us, you know. Anyway, I digress about to go, you know, on what I think about sometimes being perpetually sick. I quite like the hope in the start of the basic text, which mentions about being that there's room for the recovered addict as well, you know, which doesn't mean the same as cured. But I get a bit of a ribbing about that, so I'm not going to overdo it with that, but I just find a lot of hope in our stuff. You know, the statement of the problem I'll use again, you know, step one, you know, powerlessness and unmanageability, you know, that deep acceptance at a deep level of the darkness and being answerless to it, this thing that's killing me, this powerlessness that there's nothing I can do against this. You know, it's dark, you know, it was dark. I was destined to be under its control. You know, it was creating a void. And I hung on to my sponsor's guidance and, you know, until there was enough power effective in my life to have a working relation. Because I came from that mission of powerlessness, it opens a door, you know, to seeking a power. There's a drive to step to that something or someone, you know, initially can help me. You know, it's not just that I give up in surrender, it's I'll take some direction out of a necessity to find that new way to live. And I wasn't too sure about sanity, you know, because I thought the drugs were helping me with sanity. They were helping me, you know, the solution to what was killing me, you know, in my chronic low self-esteem, the inability to talk to girls and function in life, you know, like give me that edge, you know. Now I had to find a definition of sanity, and you know, and a lot about it is about, you know, what I heard was about a right relationship with reality, and just being open to a power that could help, you know, and you know, I had a bit of hang-ups about God stuff and dogma and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've kind of tried to take shortcuts a lot of times, you know, piggybacking on other people's beliefs. You know, I an example of my shortcuts is when asked to do suggested to do a gratitude list. I Googled it, you know, and kind of tried to tailor it to look like I'd made it myself. But I wasn't really connecting with my inner truth, you know, and there's no substitute for surrender, as an old timer used to say. But there's no substitute for me for putting in the graft, you know, and part of the graft is making physical amends. We were talking about them today at a group that I visited, and the ego deflation, you know, and getting honest and stuff. Some of the stuff that was holding me back, confusion and contradiction in my life, you know, cleared the blockage of that through steps 4 to 9, you know, having made a decision, you know, which had to be backed up by action in step 3, you know. I came, I didn't need a belief, you know, but I just needed to think that there could be something to help. And you know, I've come to believe in the power of spiritual principles, the therapeutic value of one out helping another, loads of stuff. I am really not sure how long I've been prattling on, so 4 to 9, clear the blockage, and, you know, 10, 11 and 12, you know, my 10 practices more through the day. I've done more formal stuff at the end of the day. I kind of look throughout the day and, I kind of bring that stuff into improved conscious contact, but, you know, like trying to bring in principles, you know, by inviting this power to go, you know. So the reasons that I was falling away from that stuff are the things that I've now become willing to let go of, you know. And I love the literature again for that, you know. Why ask for something to be removed unless we're entirely ready? It mentions in it, I think, step 6 reading, really, really related to the literature. I'm not the book basher that I nearly was, you know, but I really, really find that everything we need to know about the program you know, is contained in there. And it's just our experience on how we make it come to life, you know, and just the diversity and the texture, and oh, it's just amazing to me. I love this stuff. I do, you know, seeing what it does in the ripple effect. And, you know, my mum much younger today, you know, I'm able to get my mum's very strong medication and look at, you know, and kind of try and do a little bit today. You know, I'm able to do some stuff that, you know, the sky's the limit, you know, into, you know, like when we say lost dreams awaken, beautiful language, beautiful, lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arrive. Yeah, so, you know, I could admit that I was powerless. You know, I could answer a question, are you powerless or are you not over the disease of addiction? Your life manageable? And before doing this step four, you know, today I'm a bit more quicker onto anger, bitterness and ill will before they develop into full-on resentments. You know, not to say that I don't get resentments every now and again, but, you know, living this, you know, a bit more harmony. I pray for harmony, serenity and stuff like that, you know. Well, I get around it enough in rooms. I hear stuff like that. I'm not saying that you have to pray. You know, our literature is clear about that. For those of us who don't pray, it mentions I do, you know, but for those of us who don't, it talks about meditating. We've got such creative freedom, you know. We don't have to be uniform. You know, I learned this stuff, you know, like, I got to stand on my own 2 feet. Wow, amazing. You know, living immense, you know, amazing. You know, just living a different way, more in harmony with the kind of guy that I want to be. I've uncovered that through that step four and five. I've seen certain things that I want to be rid of. Been awakened to the exact nature of wrong. That's just amazing. You know, like this process, you know, and then bringing those steps to life in the tradition. You know, I think, you know, like there's different ways how people sponsor and all that kind of stuff. But like, I didn't hear a lot of traditions were like a bit of an old man's club. It was like left to others, you know, to be the enforcers, the sheriffs. And I like authority figures, you know, but I turned into one. I turned to be, you know, talking about the violators of tradition, you know, and you know what? Guess what? I push people away in a place where we need to be all included and met where we're at. And, you know, as I've opened to the spirit of anonymity and love, you know, I've seen that you know, that they're not really about that. They're not about bashing people. You know, it's just a loving thing that keeps us focused on what we're here to do. And that, there's some humility, massive amount of humility involved in that as well. You know, staying in our own lane, not getting involved in other stuff, you know, that, you know, so that we can be there for each other. Because all this stuff that I've talked about, the simplicity, you know, I can lose a simplicity, especially when invited to share for as long as I am. It, you know, it's about us being desperate dying addicts and having some love for, you know, like meeting, you know, it's just meeting each other where we're at. Because, you know, I can make it all about me when another addict is suffering, being powerless over not making, you know, but like I've opened to a bit more goodwill, you know, and to extend that hand out. And I think that's what our traditions do. You know, I brought tradition, we were talking about before, about two people desiring unity. I've had to learn that in unsuccessful relationships of the romantic kind. I've learned about asking for help in a work capacity through that. You know, this stuff really helps me in my life. It's also helped me to learn when to look outside, you know, of the program, because it mentions that, you know, our traditions don't eliminate all problems. You know, and I've learned so much, you know, because I've got a passion for this, you know, and I get around those with a passion for this stuff. I really do, you know. I really do. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. I mean, I might not be able to share, you know, my gratitude when I care and share with others the NA way, because I'm not an authority. I'm just saying that this stuff, massive gain. I still get drawn to darkness and I have bouts of low and melancholy and sometimes my thoughts get really dark, you know. I don't have to be alone today, and that means a lot to this addict. So yeah, I really didn't time myself, and I do know I prattle on, and I've never really been invited to share in length. So I'm kind of I'm not drying up, but I feel like the mind can only a friend of mine said the arse can only tolerate so much, you know, like so. You know, around sitting and listening to one guy drone. Well, it's not even droning on. To me, it is. But to others, you might have heard something that you identify with. And if you didn't, then you might have just heard that there's an addict who's living clean today and just think, wow, you know, like, you might not have heard a lot about the lengths and the grimy stuff, which I kind of needed when I came here. But I, you know, I just try and be open today to be a vessel, and this is what I was drawn to today. And you know, I'll keep coming back, and I'll be grateful to hear others, and I'll leave it there. Thank you.